you have until our provisions arrive, provisions which will help us break into your elegant home. If you don't deliver him by the aforementioned time, we'll release the beast on him and on you. We don't want to kill our own. Please just let us purge.
Why are you doing this to us?
Because you are home.
The second you get within 2 feet of me, I'm gonna snap your neck and crack your spine.
And I'll shoot you dead.
And his spine will be cracked.
And you'll be dead.
And his spine will be cracked.
He's bluffing. How do you know that?
Huh? He's FBI. He knows this stuff.
Yeah, Paul. I know that stuff.
Please just let us go. Look, you have everything ahead of you. You're still so young. Nothing's really happened yet. We could just say George's leg broke on the boat. Everyone will believe us, I promise you.
Please don't do this. Just... Why are you degrading yourself? It's as painful for me as it is for you.
You don't know anybody by the name of Iris?
I don't know nobody named Iris.
No? You got a gun?
Yeah, they hit it.
Suck on this.
I am death. Vengeance is mine.
Winter is coming.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the US of A, and with me in the state of Michigan.
This is Eric.
Eric, how are you, sir?
Oh, I've had better weeks, but I'm hanging in there.
Well, that's good, as long as you're hanging in there. And in the state of New York?
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, we'd like to give you sympathy for Dexter.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was a terrible final season. I agree.
Oh.
Bump. But yeah, it's a shame.
No, thank you. Yeah, Dexter is my oldest cat, named after the cartoon character. He predates the serial killer. But yeah, he's had a very, very bad tumor in his leg, probably a sarcoma, and that happened to hit like literally the day that everybody got locked down in New York. So that was fun. So we knew this was coming, but we got 2.5 months out of him where we thought we'd maybe get, you know, 2 or 3 days. And he was 18 years old. He had a good life, and he ended up as a kind of a grouchy old bastard. It was, you know, but he was fine. So he'll be missed.
So he was named after the Cartoon Network character?
Right, because it was something at that point that, you know, that my wife and I could agree on as a name. And when he was a kitten, he had a very large head and a relatively small body. And
I always,
much like the cartoon character did.
I always thought it was after the Dexter, the character from the Serial Killer, because I thought maybe you read the books before the show even came out. So
no, yeah. I never even heard of that.
Gotcha.
You can tell the difference with my wife's pre-me and post-me, because pre-me, like all of her cat names were like characters in musicals, you know, and then, you know, since then we've had Dexter, and then you had Lilith and Spike and Angel from Buffy the Vampire Slayer. So,
right. Yeah. My last
and Ares, the Greek God of War.
Oh, there you go. Ares, Greek God of War. Yeah. My last two dogs before I was married was, Wagner after Richard Wagner and William and Faulkner after William Faulkner. So, and they were both girls, but, people say, why would you name you? And it's like, those are last names. Girls can have those last names, Wagner and Faulkner. There you go. Some just trivia. No one. No comments. Anybody?
So Wagner Perone.
You don't want me to comment.
I'd be careful about introducing a German dog to a French family. That's all I'm saying.
Oh dear.
Well, the dogs were German. That's true. They were Weimaraners. So both of them. But yeah, that's fair enough. Anyway, all right. So this is Dark Discussions, your place for discussion of horror, film, fiction, and all that's fantastic, as I said earlier. But before I do that, we have someone from Massachusetts.
Hi, everyone. This is Abe here.
Abe, how's it going, my friend?
I'm doing okay. Just keep him busy.
Excellent. Who we are for the new time listeners, basically, we are a podcast that discusses various genre films and critiques and reviews. So horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, cult films, midnight movies, drive-in films, art house films, foreign films, and whatnot. Basically, we try to discuss a genre intelligently. I kind of screwed that one up again, but we try to discuss. I forget.
Wheelbarrow.
That's right. Hyperbole. For crying out loud. Anyway, we try to talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. There we go. I said it. You can find us.
Try being the operative word there.
Yes, exactly.
True. We do have an email, darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can email us your thoughts on our topics. So you give your thoughts and we'll read those thoughts on the podcast. Or you can email us anything else, like critique, your own reviews on various films or video games that you've had, played or seen, ideas for topics for the podcast and whatnot. And we would appreciate that at darkdiscussions@aol.com. We also have a Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where you can join the conversation, either start your own or participate in various conversations that are there. And that's Dark Discussions Podcast on Facebook. And Eric, we have a website.
You always ask me this like it's new to you. We do have a website. Phil's the one that actually upkeeps it. It is at www.darkdiscussions.com. On the front page, on the right-hand side, you can find links to Friends of the Podcast. Up at the top of the page, you can find a link to our articles section, where there are articles written by myself as well as others. There is an audio section at the top as well. There you can find every episode of Dark Discussion, as well as any of its spinoffs, available to download for free. There's bound to be something that interests you there, so check it out. And front center on the front page is a link to our Patreon account. Patreon is a service that allows you to support your online artists. Producing this podcast is not free. We have to pay for things like server hosting and equipment and movie rentals and so on and so forth. So if you'd like to help offset the cost of producing this show, that's how you can do it. So you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on the front page of darkdiscussions.com. For every $5 a month that you care to donate, you'll have the opportunity to choose a topic for us to possibly do a show on. We take all the submissions from our patrons and draw them at random on a quarterly basis to do a show based on a topic picked by a patron. So for more information, you can go to patreon.com/darkdiscussions or follow the link on darkdiscussions.com.
Yay!
That's excellent, excellent. We do have two topics in the wheelbarrow. In the wheelhouse. We are planning to do. For crying out loud. We have Dig Two Graves and The Mothman Prophecies. Both of those are episodes that have been picked for Patreon and will be recorded later or sometime soon, or definitely this year, and we will release them as time permits. And if you want to donate, it would be helpful and thankful for we appreciate it. If you want to find us, you find us basically wherever podcasts are found. Just go to any of those places, Spotify, iTunes, whatever, and choose Dark Discussions Podcast, and it will pop up, and you can subscribe there, or just go to darkdiscussions.com and listen to us right off the website, as Eric mentioned. All right, sounds good. I think we're good. So I guess we can any news or anything like that, we'll talk about at the end. Before we do all that, I guess we can get into our topic tonight. So Eric, what are we going to discuss tonight?
Tonight we are going to be talking about a movie that has currently tied Black Panther for having a run at 5 weeks in a row as being tops at the box office. Movie we're covering tonight is called The Wretched.
That's quaint. 5 weeks. Huh. We're old enough to remember when, like, E.T. did, like, you know, 4 months.
I couldn't resist posting that article on the group page on Facebook, because the headline, of course, was The Wretched ties box office wrestlers held by the Avengers and Black Panther. It's like, oh, come on now. This is not exactly the same thing, and we all would just stop.
Yeah, but you know, if this was your movie, you would market the fuck out of that.
True.
That's right. Or your number one movie for 5 weeks in a row in April of 2020.
Hey, what's going on?
Hey, neighbor.
You see anything weird outside your house, you tell me, all right?
Dad, Mom's being weird.
Mom's always been weird.
What are you doing up here?
Dylan! Don't let her in.
My son likes to play hide and seek. Can you bring him down?
I didn't say he was here.
You're a very stupid boy.
Can I help you?
Is Dylan home?
Dylan, down here, baby.
You know, your son, Dylan?
I don't have a son.
He had no idea who I was talking about.
Listen, come on. Stay, Dylan.
He's gone. I know it.
I'd like to report a missing kid.
Are you okay, Ben?
Where is your sister?
I need you to tell me what's going on. Ben!
That's right. The Wretched... technically a 2019 film because it did the festivals, but to all purposes, we consider it, as everybody else does, as a 2020 film because that's when it was released to everybody. It has been playing drive-in movie theaters due to the COVID-19 pandemic and also VOD rental. And as a result, as Eric said, that it is tied for box office greatness. And the thing that's interesting about that doesn't necessarily mean isn't a good film, because we're kind of laughing at it because of not many theaters are open.
Yeah, there's not much competition either.
All right, but what it means is, unlike those other films that are backed by multi-gazillion dollar companies that are monopolies and push this up on us, and everybody has heard of Marvel and whatever, this film doesn't have that. So that's the reason why it wouldn't be a blockbuster like that. But all that said, still quite impressive. Directed by Brett Pierce and Drew T. Pierce, who I assume are related, written by them as well. Starring a lot of unknown folk, some character actors, TV-type folk and whatnot. The lead is someone named John Paul Howard, who plays Ben. The film is IFC Films or IFC Midnight Film, which is basically AMC Networks. So that is actually a gigantic company. It was... I played at Fantasia Fest in July last year, 2019. That's why it was called a 2019 film. But it was released May 1st, 2020 in the United States. And for folks who are curious, this is June 4th, 2020, that we're recording this, because some of our listeners, such as Pam, always are curious because the episodes aren't necessarily released the week that they're recorded.
When you released like this week, it was recorded episode. About a year ago.
No, it was actually recorded... 2 months ago?
It was probably like February or something. Yeah, it wasn't.
It had been in the planning for a year.
Yeah. And we never did it. And so we just finally picked it up and recorded it like 2 months as an extra episode. And that was the Black Summer episode. Now, That's all I got about the film, except that it is getting favorable reviews, 85 reviews on the Rotten Tomatoes website for a 74% rating, which is fairly good. Some folks are calling it a Stranger Things type of film. Others are calling it R.L. Stein or what's the other one that... Goosebumps, that's it, type of film. So, yet, is it really, and some are even calling it more like Summer of 84, which came out a couple of years ago. But we'll discuss all that later. So we'll go around on how we heard about this film and what we thought about it. And since, Eric, you're the one that discussed it as a possible topic, why don't you go first?
It came to my attention. Actually, I had it in my watch list for a while, because every now and then I just go through my Apple TV and look at horror movies that are out there and put a bunch of them in my watch list so I don't forget about them. This one popped up in that article. And I was like, all right, well, maybe that. This movie wasn't my jam. I didn't hate it, but I wasn't particularly interested by it either. I am a story guy, as I've said before. And I felt that this movie, we've talked about this many, many times on the podcast about how it's great. One of the things that makes horror movies is that when they give you rules. And this movie didn't have any rules, and that threw me a little bit because stuff kept on happening. And I was like, oh, this now? Okay, why this? All right. So I don't think anybody in the movie was a horrible actor. I thought it looked pretty good. But overall the storytelling, didn't really capture my imagination. So it was okay.
All right. Very good. Abe.
So I heard about this because I think I caught whiff of it, through some advertisements and stuff like that, you know, kind of what films were on the radar. I think maybe Rue Morgue or something, or maybe it was a trailer by accident. But you know, it came to the forefront when we decided to be this week's topic. I definitely see why people draw like comparisons to the Goosebumps series, or maybe Stranger Things or the Summer '84. There is a lot, coming of age story. I think I kind of got a bit of a Fright Night from it. Or Disturbia, with a little mixed in there as well. The story plays a lot of similar beats that you kind of see in a lot of films. You know, hit some person moving into a town they're not familiar with. Some establishing some little characters here and there, and something horrible going on. No one believes them and stuff like, you know, that kind of setup. The cast did well. I think everyone was pretty good. I'm with Eric that there are some issues that I've had with how the rules were done. There were some things that I thought were kind of cool, but there were some moments where I was kind of scratching my head as to why they were. There's a twist, not the twist at the end, but a twist beforehand where I was kind of scratching my head as to why they bothered doing that. It didn't really feel all that necessary. But I think the creature was kind of cool, a little underused, but I think it was a pretty, I would say it was enjoyable watch, not exactly what I'll be, you know, buying on disc or popping it in for rewatches, but it did have some pretty strong qualities, and some weak points here and there. I could certainly recommend it. Someone was just was see have a film to kind of just sit back on a weekend and watch, but it wouldn't be a top recommend in the horror genre. I'm interested what everybody else has to say, and looking forward to dissecting it.
All right, Mike.
First of all, I'll say Abe took the words right out of my mouth in the comparison with Fright Night and Disturbia. I get the attempt to try to latch it to Summer of 84 or Stranger Things, but these kids are a bit older, and it's really focusing mostly on one kid for most of the film. I mean, he has friends and there's interactions, but it's really one person investigating when everyone else around him is kind of skeptical. And so I think Fright Night was the first one left to mind, and then Disturbia was another one. So I would absolutely say that. I will say, while I don't think this is the greatest movie ever told, and I certainly don't think it was the most original movie ever told, I was surprised how much I liked it. Because, one, they're not afraid to kill kids. But you know, so you don't really know where they're going. There are children put in jeopardy in this film up to the very end, and you really don't know. I didn't, anyway. Like, if they had the normal young child in jeopardy plot armor, because you've seen several children eaten in a gruesome way before up to this point. They killed a freaking infant.
Yeah.
Actually, I think two of them. There's a lot of stuff that's very familiar. That's not necessarily bad. It's not original. I'm not giving credit for that, but I think it's competent. Where I do think they excelled, I thought, with the work with the makeup and the practical effects was outstanding. So if you're somebody who's really into good practical effects or practical makeup, I mean, this isn't like The Thing. It's not that showy of a piece, you know, and it's not like Dead Alive level gore. But I think what they do give you is really solid in that regard. I think it's just, you know, it's sometimes you only need a movie to be like a solid base hit. You don't need a home run. And to me, this is a solid base hit. I was also going in, I have to say, I was totally expecting, for the reasons that we've discussed, that, you know, the fact that it's this tongue-in-cheek joke about it tying Black Panther's record for being number one in the box office 5 weeks running, when it's the only film that is so shitty they're still willing to release it when there's no theaters open. I was expecting it to be an absolute dog, you know, so I will admit that. And so maybe my and especially none of us had seen it when we agreed to do it. Right.
Right.
So this was entirely a blind pick. So I enjoyed it for what it was. And so there is an ending, and I'm sure how I for reasons I will talk to. But it's definitely something where you do not want to be spoiled going into the movie.
All right. Very good. Yeah, for me, I think I heard about it maybe 5 weeks ago when it won its first week at the box office, because it was the film that was playing at drive-ins and whatnot and so forth. So otherwise, I had never heard of it or even knew about it. And then as the weeks were coming up, Eric suggested it. I wasn't sure if I wanted to see it, though, because the goosebumps and the R.L. Stine and all that stuff kind of made me go, oh, no, because I didn't want another one of that scary stories in the dark type of stuff. And so I wasn't looking too forward to it. So like a fool, I read the IMDb blurb. So I kind of knew what it was going to, what the creature or antagonist was going to be, which is unfortunate. I wish I had gone in completely blind. All in all, besides it being young people and coming of age, it's still its own distinct thing, even though, like most films nowadays, you know, it cribs from other films. I love this film. I thought it was a great film and could easily be a top five for me. Totally surprised me with its scares and violence, because I similar to Summer of 84, it was very, very dark by the end of the film, rather than, or even sooner in this film than Summer of 84, and so it wasn't the goosebumps or the R.L. Stine at all. It was a true horror film through and through, and probably R-rated, though I'm not 100% sure. They go to places, as Mike said, no one has plot armor except maybe the lead character. A dog dies, unfortunately, but it does happen. And
you didn't watch it all the way to the end, did you?
Yeah, I did. I kept on watching even the dog died. But It was the ending.
Oh, the dog survived, actually. You see it at the end with a bandage over it.
Oh, I missed it. Where
yes,
was that? After the credits?
At the end.
Yeah, as
on the
dock.
No, it was right before the credits. When he's on the docks at the end.
Right.
It's with the fisherman.
Yeah, see, I didn't know that dog was the same dog. Oh, that's why they kept on showing the fisherman with the dog all the time. I kept on wondering why they were doing that. Now I do. All right, so the dog lived. There's no deaths. This is good. So this movie's even better. It gets another half star.
No, there's no dog deaths. There's infants that die, but we don't care about that.
Right. That's not important, like the dog. So I would give it a high thumbs up. This is a film that I could possibly buy on disc or VOD when it becomes available to purchase, because I could see myself rewatching it over and over during the Halloween month, because it's a really good film. I really enjoyed it. The acting was solid. Almost all the characters, actually all the characters I liked. So when people died, it was scary and sad. It wasn't like, yes. So, and you know, horror films, you'd rather be uncomfortable. So when certain characters died, it was unfortunate. So, yeah, big thumbs up for me. So I think I may have liked the film even more than you, Mike.
Sounds like it, but it's to piggyback on one thing you said, I forgot to mention, because I hadn't heard, and I knew almost nothing about it. I had read the blurb, and the blurb is kind of like the blurb you got for Fright Night, which is, you know, going way back when, which is that there's a teenage boy suspects his neighbor is a vampire, right? You know, it doesn't really spoil anything to know it's a vampire. They kind of tell you that right up front. And it doesn't really spoil anything to know that, in this case, the boy thinks his neighbor is, and the blurb I read is a witch, but it's not really a witch.
Right, it's a dark mother. It's a tree spirit or something.
Or something like that, right. But I can understand why, if you're looking for a blurb that people will latch on to, witch is not a bad one to use. It's right. The closest comparison you can get, other than just saying monster or evil spirit. But the thing with something like Goosebumps, Scary Stories, and there was an Are You Afraid of the Dark, I think, is another one. Earl Stein is Goosebumps. Definitely stories for young kids. Right. Even Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, which is creepy, it's creepy to like a 7 or 8 year old. It's not really going to disturb a 12-year-old into having nightmares.
No.
This one is not going to be appropriate for a Goosebumps fan if they're in the Goosebumps age bracket.
And to be honest, the Scary Stories Tell in the Dark are mostly scary for the imagery rather than the stories themselves. The stories themselves are pretty tame in comparison to something like this.
Right. But Mike's point is that this film here is not for younger audiences. No, and that's why I said I think it was an R-rated film, to be honest. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I certainly could have handled it at a young age, but I don't consider myself normal. And as I've said many times, I'm one of the reasons I'm a horror fan is because my parents didn't understand the phrase age appropriate.
The rest of us don't consider you to be normal either, if that helps.
Yeah. But, you know, I also wouldn't say I was normal as a child. But I would certainly say, like, anyone under 10, I would not recommend this for. I think there are probably a lot of 10, 11, 12-year-olds, 13-year-olds who probably could watch it, even though it is kind of gruesome. But you have to know your child. I would certainly recommend, if you are a parent who with children, watch it first, and you'll be able to gauge it. And obviously, if you're listening to this, you are a fan of these kind of films. So, yeah.
Yeah, the lead character is 16 and a half, basically, because he just got his license and he's about to inherit a car from his mother and all that. So it's upper age high schooler would be fine to watch this film. I would agree with that. But then again, most people that are up age high school can pretty much watch any R-rated film, too, and they've watched as much pornography as anybody. So I don't think anybody.
I was going to say, if they're in high school, they've probably seen Two Girls, One Cup. So,
by the way, just according to IMDb, this movie is not rated.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. All right. Sounds good.
But
it's
always important to remember that what not rated means is literally not rated. They didn't submit it or recommend it. You could take a Pixar movie and say it's an unrated movie if you just don't submit it to the MPAA, because they do that shit all the time with, watch the unrated director's cut, and all they do is add like one little scene of the boy eating cookies with grandma. It's like it's technically unrated because they never submitted that to be cut. It's, you know, that cut of it. It doesn't mean that this is the stuff that was taken out that was just too hardcore for the regular theaters.
Right. Either way, unrated, it's for mature audience, I would say.
I would definitely say it's at least
in this case, yes. Phil referred to it as R-rated, and I just wanted to throw that out there that it's not actually been rated.
Right. Hulu would put in front of it for mature audience.
MA, yes.
Yes. There you go. All right. So, Eric, do we have a IMDb, which unfortunately kind of lets you know what the monster is? Or
wiki, wiki. A defiant teenage boy struggling with his parents' imminent divorce faces off with a 1,000-year-old witch who is living beneath the skin of and posing as the woman next door.
Yeah, it really tells you way too fucking much.
Yeah, it kind of does. I will say this, the poster is awesome because it's like this hot naked chick on the poster. It's kind of awesome. Anyway.
I saw a mask.
That's cool too, because it has one of them what do you call those things? Deer skulls or cattle skull or something too. It's kind of cool. Anyway, all right, yeah. So it kind of. I wish I had not read that, because if I had not read that, I would have just known that there was a hot chick that was probably evil that was in it, based off of the poster. But because I knew that, read that, I had already known that next door neighbors and all that, which is kind of unfortunate, because the next door neighbor, you get to meet her for a good 20 minutes in the film as a normal human being, and you kind of like her. I mean, she's kind of cool. You know, she's hip because she got the tattoos, but she's a good suburban soccer mom too. So she's perfect. And then the whole family,
she can gut her own deer, kind of.
Right. Yeah. That was kind of cool too. Yeah. So she's a true Michigan person, because this takes place in Michigan. I was trying to figure out where it was.
Does it take place in Michigan? I know it was filmed in Michigan.
The reason I know it took place in Michigan even before I knew that it was filmed there was the next door neighbor wore a Michigan T-shirt, and so I was saying, all right, it's got to be Michigan.
Because, I missed that.
Yeah, because there's a harbor, but there's no waves.
There's a what?
There's a harbor.
A harbor?
Harbor.
A harbor. But there's no waves, so I said, it's got to be the Great Lakes. And then when I saw her T-shirt, I was pretty sure. And then I looked it up. I watched the end, and it basically said through the credits that it was a pretty famous resort bay in the northwest part of the Lower Peninsula. Let's talk about anything and everything. Let's talk about stuff that isn't spoiler before we get into the spoiler alert. I don't know if anybody wants to talk about it, but let's see. It was interesting how, even though the boy is the lead, it's a pretty large ensemble cast, even if you know that he's the nominal lead. And I thought that was kind of cool, because it allowed us to learn about the victims before they became victims. And that was good, I felt, because I thought it was just going to be someone moves in, similar to, like you said, Mike, Fright Night or Abe, and they're just going to be bad right from the start. But instead, we get to learn about the neighbors and their normal family and all that, and then the bad things start to happen. So I thought that was kind of cool that it was kind of ensemble.
There's a good pace here. It's only like 90 minutes or so, but it moves at a good steady pace from one scene to the next, establishing things and getting things rolling afterwards. I think for the most part, a lot of the scenes were really well used and doing what they needed to do. It didn't really do too many unnecessary detours to kind of hurt that pacing.
Yep. What about you guys? Did you think it built us?
Well, here's the thing. Like, my biggest issue with this film is that I had to ask the question, wait, what? Far too many times while I was watching this movie. I thought there were perhaps a couple few too many characters And we like the all the peripheral high school folks. I didn't need them distracting me. And there's a whole element of this movie I don't want to get into till we're in spoiler territory. But there were no rules established. So when things start happening, I was like, wait, now what's going on? Okay, that's going on. Why is that going on? Why does this have to be this way? Why is this happening? When did that happen? And I just found myself having to ask those kinds of questions way too often, which is why I perhaps didn't enjoy the movie as much.
Mike, what about yourself? What do you think of the large characters, ensemble cast, and also the buildup of meeting these characters rather than just going straight into the horror?
Well, for a while I was wondering where it was going. Because based on the blurb I had read, I had kind of expected it was going to be the girlfriend, for lack of a better term, who was going to end up being the one that got possessed.
The father's girlfriend? Yeah.
No.
Oh, his girlfriend.
No. The Mallory's girlfriend. Mallory was going to be the one that was possessed. And so you're telling this whole story with the neighbor, the mom, and the husband with the, was it Dylan, I think was the little boy's name?
Yeah.
And the infant, and it takes a while for their story to intersect, right, with our lead. So at first I was thinking, like, again, I admit it, I was totally expecting this to be a badly made, terrible film. And it wasn't. But I was at first thinking, and I've seen this in films before, where like, oh, did they add like this separate storyline in the, like, to up the body count before? Because it was so separate from the original, you know, sometimes they just add a storyline because it's just a little bit too short to make it into a theatrical run. It's like, oh, we need another storyline to get us up to an 80 or 90 minute movie. But then eventually they do cross over and cross over heavily. So I knew that wasn't it. So I guess what I liked about that is that you do get to know this other family, and they are tangential to the lead character's plot line for the most part. You could have underwritten them, but you do get to see what happens to the family, and it does involve deaths of young people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was
just deaths of all
really not expecting them to go there.
Mike gets very excited when there's a movie where children die.
Well, this is, we've had that recent discussion on the Dark Discussions Facebook page, you know, about how people feel about what happens when children or animals are murdered. And some people are completely turned off by it. And for me, it's always a matter of how is it handled. I can't stand, you know, when you have, you know, a dog or a small child survive something that no dog or small child should have reasonably survived, right? You know,
that's true. Yeah,
the giant monster that's been destroying everything in its path sees the puppy, stops in front of the puppy, and then deliberately steps around it so that it doesn't. It's like, really, really, even the monster was overcome by the cuteness of the puppy. Come on, we know that's horse.
I remember the Halloween, the recent Halloween film where a young person was killed, and suddenly Michael Myers has the opportunity to kill an even younger infant and doesn't do it without any explanation of why. And it's just like it feels inconsistent to the rules set by what this entity, this villain is. You know, if you weren't really the goal there, don't put that point in there because it leads into a head scratching inconsistency with what you tried to establish as a rule.
Well, I think part of it is the roller coaster effect, right? They want to make the audience nervous. They want to scare them. And putting a child in jeopardy like that will do that. But for a large portion of the audience, especially on a high profile horror film like the third movie carrying the name Halloween, they could have lost a lot of people from the audience, and that roller coaster could have jumped the tracks. So I get why they put it there. I guess I get why they didn't do it. But as hardcore horror fans, it feels cheap. Where everybody else, oh, thank God, I'm so glad they didn't murder the baby. And that really could have cost them a lot of goodwill. So I get it. I understand it. I'm just not approving of it. So in this case, I think it really works to, and several people on the Facebook page basically said that, is that when you murder a child or an animal, it basically tells you that they are going to do anything. They certainly are going to kill off any one of the cannon fodder characters that you otherwise see stalking the film. The film was filled with those friends, that quote unquote friends that Eric talked about, who were basically there to be shitheads, I think, mm-hmm. more to give you some sympathy for the main character than anything else. All of them, if this was a Nightmare on Elm Street movie, all of them would have been dead by the final act. Absolutely every last one of them, right?
Right, right.
Or Friday the 13th or what have you. And yet, none of them do. So to me, it was this misdirection that they built throughout the entire film of you think it's going to be one thing and it ends up, sort of going some other way. That's kind of what I really, one of the things I liked about it, besides the effectiveness of the, on the technical level of what they did.
Yeah, yeah. No, and you're right. I think that's what the misdirect, the ability to have anyone and everyone get wiped out, including lead characters, and including characters that you actually like and thought would be lead characters, such as Dylan and Abby, is what makes this screenplay better than a lot of the old time slashers that have now become tropes. So they didn't want to follow the tropes that other films had, and they wanted to change it up a bit, and the directors, who are the same people as the screenwriters, I guess decided to do that, and I felt that was good, and made the film a true horror film and not just another copy of an old time slasher or the Goosebumps film that some people were trying to compare this to, just because it has a young character as the lead.
One thing I really liked was the use of this so-called skinwalking concept with the creature. I thought they had some really nice, unsettling, and really cool effects here and there with how the creature uses its female victims as meat puppets, and we get some really creative and really uncanny valley kind of moments where the body's skin kind of stretching and kind of twisting beyond its limits like a suit.
To add to that is that the people that it does it to, first of all, it's awesome. It's an unbelievable moment of special effects and scares, and it's practical too. But it's also the characters that it does it to are main characters. It's not just the random neighbor 27 that dies and then it's there. I mean, these are main characters that we followed prior to them becoming meat puppets for the wretched, So I think it made it even more uncomfortable to see it happen, because we see it happen to a number of lead characters that become its, possession. And then we know what's going to happen to another lead character after the film ends, because since the movie ends at a certain point and the wretched may still exist, we know the same thing that happened to other characters is going to happen to that character too. So, I agree with you, Abe. That was one of the high points, the way the creature takes over its victims.
Yeah, it's nice, that little bit of body horror, and it kind of does some creative with the whole how some horror movies don't have the budget to really show the monster a lot and have to usually have it possess a human. At the very least, this makes it feel more creative than just having some possessed person walking around with very little makeup effects,
Oh, there's a great scene in the middle of the movie, I'm going to say, where the possessed person is looking at themselves in the mirror.
Oh, yeah.
And their skin is starting to sag bag, and like you just see her like rub her hand along her arm to sort of smooth out the wrinkles, right?
Right.
And it just looks so well done and so seamless, and looking in the eye and pushing up on the because it's around the eye, and I could be wrong. Maybe it's all an appliance. I mean, maybe it's a the whole thing is an artificial head, but it really looks like a person looking at themselves in the mirror and trying to push their sagging skin back into place. So getting makeup around the eye can be really, really tricky.
Oh yeah,
right. It's why usually when you watch things, let's say like Star Trek, usually everything in the whole orbital of the eye, all they do is put in like eye makeup, not prosthetics. You know, right. Put some eyeshadow or something there, and then they just build up from the eyebrow and then from the chin bone. Not the chin bone, the cheekbone. And I just thought that was a really good, you know, a well done practical effect. You know, or if there was CGI in it, it was well blended.
Yeah.
It was really cool. I really liked that a lot, and it gave me a little bit of flashbacks to the farmer from the first Men in Black film too.
Yeah.
But right. No, it was really cool. I really liked that a lot, and I think what the creators did really well was, you know, work around their small budget to really still make this creature as menacing as they could, even though they couldn't show it as much as they may have wanted to.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of creature effects we've seen in the past, whether it's Tim Curry in, was it Legend? Was that the film?
Yeah,
that was really good, and that was all practical. And then, you know, we've seen the Jamie Nash Alien film. What's that one called? Where I forget what it's called. I don't know. I thought you would know, Mike, because I know you follow Jamie Nash.
Which film are you talking about?
Is he talking about Altered?
Altered, that's it. Yeah,
that was a good creature. One.
Altered. So there's been a lot of really good creatures that have been practical effects, and this one here is pretty close to being 100% practical effects, except for a couple of moments where they have like bones moving, and even that I could think it could possibly be not be practical anyway, because they have someone called named Madeline Stunkel that plays the wretch, and the thing is, I wouldn't be surprised if that person is a contortionist or something of that nature too. So to be honest, most of the effects here could be all practical, and it's just so well done. You just think it's probably CGI, because it's like, oh, they couldn't do that, you know.
And there's one scene where you see like a bulge in the neck, and we've all seen bulges in necks before in horror movies. That's not anything new, but it really did have the look to me of like there's something inside the skin like turning around to get comfortable, right? Like she is shifting in her skin, like the inner creature, you know, as a bony creature who's just sort of realigning herself. And it's just a weird thing that just to me really worked.
Yeah. Now, in this film here, if the wretch gets you, just like in a vampire film or a zombie film, you're dead. So there's no hope of coming back. And in this film, the wretch only takes a woman, so it only goes for a females. But the character.
Oh, you mean once you get possessed?
Yes, exactly. And then, but it also kills other characters too, both men and women, or you know, boys and girls. So, that's the thing here is that you figure that, oh, all right, at the end everybody's going to come back to life and, you know, the evil's gone or whatever, but no, that doesn't happen. You're dead. I mean, you're really dead. And that was another thing that surprised me about this film too, because again, having heard all the comparisons, I was expecting stuff like that, where everybody was going to be okay at the end or something like that. Even Fright Night, you know, certain people who you think are doomed are okay once the vampire is killed and stuff. So here, no, that doesn't happen. Let's see. Anything else anybody wanted to bring up before we throw in the spoilers and talk about anything and everything? All right, so I guess we'll throw up the spoiler, Eric, because then there's probably some stuff you want to talk about that we haven't talked about, too. So at this point, everything and anything we are going to discuss, for folks who are curious, you can find this film on VOD anywhere. It's right around $6.99 at the moment is what I paid. You can't buy it yet. And it's also at multiple drive-ins and various cinemas that may actually be open during the coronavirus pandemic. So at this point, we'll discuss anything and everything, including spoilers. All right, so setup is this boy named Ben, who goes to live with his father during the summer. His parents are divorced or divorcing, and he and I think he has a little brother too, and I forget the brother's name. Is it Gage?
Nathan,
yeah, maybe that's what it is, yeah. And so they're going to go live with the father for the summer. Father lives in a resort community on Lake Superior, I believe, or at least a bay on Lake Superior. And that's pretty much the setup of the film, right? That's it, pretty much. Anything else anybody wanted to add? Anything? What do we want to discuss?
Was up with the opening scene?
Was there
any particular reason they threw that in there?
That was a 35-year in the past. Yeah. Anybody want to answer that for Eric?
I don't understand it. I guess because it was trying, because it takes a little bit before they have the creature, the wretch, pop into the storyline. Maybe they're just trying to give us a teaser of it. Because I always have a mixed feeling about bringing in random characters who are just going to die in the opening and spend time on them, even though they don't really factor into anything. I mean, it kind of gives ideas, you know, it's just the nature of the creature and what it can do. But I think, honestly, if that had been removed and just had a like, weird teaser of Ben being drowned and just move on to the present, being in the present, we could have the audience be surprised by everything that happens from their point on, rather than kind of show things ahead of time. I don't know. I always feel like it's kind of a waste of time to pop in these kind of characters, have them die, and then never mention them again.
Right.
Yeah, a lot of horror films do that, though. You know. But go on, Mike. Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of like Jaws, but not. In that Jaws, you know, you have that opening with a character who's mostly unrelated to the rest of the film, other than the fact that it, you know, the death does start Brody's investigation. You know, it's just a thing to A, start out with a scare and to show you what you're dealing with, right? I think Tremors starts with something similar, if I'm correct, remember correctly.
Actually, no, Tremors starts with our celebration, main characters.
Oh, right, because it starts with Kevin showing off his baby.
Earthquake!
Yeah.
Right. But there are a lot of
films where something like this happens, right? I mean, even Friday the 13th had something like that, where something fishy happens at the beginning, right? Before the credits start.
I'm just wondering if I missed something. That's all.
No, I think to me, the main thing, the main purpose of it would be, is that this is not vampire, zombie, werewolf, or really even witch, and therefore it's not a thing that you could just say, oh my god, look, it's a vampire, and 90% of your audience goes, all right, I know the rules, I know what this thing is we're facing. Mm-hmm. So I think the idea of just showing you that here's this thing that lives in a tree that eats children, you know, and doing it up front, showing it to you instead of somebody finding, which does kind of happen later, but somebody finding like the old dusty text that says old woman that possesses people and eats babies. You know, this is, I think, a more exciting way. And it frames your So, like, you know the kid's in jeopardy, right? The minute this thing starts to show up. Right. When you get the kid looking at the hole. You know, so I think it's just a matter of giving the audience information that frames what comes later. That would be my guess.
Okay. Did anybody pick up on, because there's a chance that I just missed it. Did anybody pick up on, like, the method or rules surrounding the transfer from one body to another?
It seems like you have to. It has to be from, you know, contact with the victim, actually killing the victim and assimilating them. As we see, if the first what was the character's name? Abby. You know, since
Abby. Because I was trying to figure out how it got from Abby to what's her face? Was it Sarah? The girlfriend of the dad.
Yeah, because what it seems because it. It basically, Abby goes to check the baby, she gets pulled under there and can hear her being torn apart through the baby monitor.
No, I got that.
Yeah, well,
how did she get from her to Sarah? That's what I missed.
That's what I was confused about, too, because there's a scene later on where Ben's trying to chase Abby into the woods because she has Lily. And then Sarah's there as well. But, yeah, it doesn't really give an explanation of how much time had passed till when the wretch had got a hold of Sarah. And there was even less of an explanation of how it got to, as you said, we're in spoilers, so if you don't hear the last twist, Mallory.
Mm-hmm. And that's the that was the other thing that confused me, is that it seemed like sometimes it would be inhabiting a body and acting all freaky. Like something seriously wrong, like when Abby was naked in a weird position in front of the window. Like something's not right there. And then there were scenes, like particularly with Sarah and Mallory, where they were just, it was acting completely normal, like that person normally acts. So what and why and how, I don't understand. So that was really my big issue to the movie, is that the possession rules didn't seem to exist. Were inconsistent.
Like, you know, Abby, for example, they established her as this very tough girl, tomboy, who loves to drink and, you know, go into the woods and stuff like that. But when the wretch possesses her body, if she's wearing a dress and she's acting really weird, as you said. She's walking straight.
I'd have to disagree with you. She was as feminine as you could get. It's just that she was also, the biker, beer drinking type. So I could see when she was wearing those dresses, those are the type of dresses I would think she would have kind of wore anyway, Abe.
I don't know, because they established her for most of the part wearing the, as you said, all the biker stuff. For the most part, until she is up.
Right. She's killed.
And that's supposed to be one of the weird things.
And
then, not to mention, her demeanor, her behavior is completely off, like very monotone and whispery and weird.
And that was my big issue, is that she was acting like that, and then for some reason, when she was inhabiting Sarah and Mallory, she was acting like them.
Exactly.
So what's
like
the deal?
Almost like a permanent image. Perfect imitation, like in John Carpenter's Thing, all the behavior and mannerisms. Yet Abby is completely like a zombie meat puppet.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. No, and there was she looked off to me.
Was that Phil?
I agree with you and Mike, which is as the wretch went to victim, it appeared that it was able to control become a better imitation as it went. So the first one was Abby, and the imitation wasn't as good. And then the second one was Sarah, and it was a little better, even though, you know, the flowers and stuff would die when it was near. And then the third one, Mallory, it was almost like a perfect imitation. And it actually learned to stay away from certain things that would give it away.
But how long has this thing been around?
Yeah, because it's
been learned by now.
A 35-year time skip. It should have learned by that point.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm not trying to piss on everybody's fun. That, those are,
that's, watch Clark.
Those are the things that bug me.
Right. Watch Clark. Keep an eye on him. And watch him.
Yeah. No, I do think her behavior was supposed to be a little off, and the husband was just kind of oblivious to it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, it happened within a 20...
And what about the cop? What the fuck was that about?
Oh, yeah. Well, there's a scene.
That's an easy explanation.
Yeah, because when Ben's in the police car, he's looking at the Sarah lean over, talking to the cop, and then she gets closer to his ear. That's how he pretty much brainwashed Ty as well. Basically, she put some kind of spell there and turns into a zombie.
Basically, what happened, Sarah,
she wasn't actually inhabiting
What she did to Ty, what Abby did to Ty, whispering in his ear and turning him into like a drone, Sarah did the same thing to the cop.
Okay.
And that's why you can see blood coming out of the cops.
Yeah, like I got the sense when she is forced to do that to the husband, that I got the sense that she was frustrated by it, like she didn't want to have to do that, probably because if he was up and around, functioning like a normal human being otherwise, you know, it draws less suspicion, and it was more like, fuck, I'm going to have to, they're sort of like Tommy Lee Jones and Men in Black, it's like, fuck, I'm going to have to mind wipe this guy.
Yeah.
And so basically, she mind wipes him, and from that point on, he's just mowing the lawn.
Basically, when he becomes aware that something's wrong because he saw either someone told him or he saw the note that said,
Mallory,
and so he went to go look, and then he noticed that the lock he couldn't unlock because his wife had changed the lock, and so he knew something was up, and that's when the wife burnt out his brain and made him a drone. So.
That's a hell of a power. There was a point I kept wondering when she's in Sarah's body.
I mean, it'll do that to you.
It's in Sarah's body, and she's talking to Ben like normal. Why did she just get close and just whisper in his ear and just turn him into a drone and get rid of him?
That's what I was confused too, Abe.
On a positive note, I did enjoy the aspect that when she eats somebody's baby, she makes them forget about that child. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, the problem is she doesn't have to eat the. She does it before she eats the baby. Keep in mind that the twist where Ben doesn't even remember she had a brother until later in the film.
Right.
Yeah, I think I kind of forgot. I'm with Eric. I think I'm with Eric in that if they were to, and that the rules are a little sketchy here. I don't mind that because we don't have that moment where Van Helsing comes in to explain everything to us.
Right.
If there was a sequel, I think they would have to lay things out a little bit more clearly, exactly. Right. They would have to lay things out a little bit more clearly, like exactly what did she need to do. Like, for example, we see her always possess women. Is that a requirement or is that just preference? You know, we see her eat children. Is she not? Like, does she, you know, what's the age cap? Right. Is it puberty? What's the deal?
Right. And what was she doing for the last 35 years?
Like cicadas or, the creeper or something like that.
Or it, every 27 years or whatever.
Maybe she was reading Possession for Dummies.
Right, and the only reason Abby becomes a target is because Abby and Dylan were out in the forest for a walk, similar to what I do every noon hour with my dog. They were doing the same thing, where they're just doing a hike in the woods. And the beast, and that's when they came to the area or a tree where the wretch happened to be. And either this woods isn't walked through much, or it's a part of the woods that doesn't have a path.
Lost.
That's what I think it was. Yeah, because remember they said, Dylan says, we're lost, Mom, because they lost the path. And I think they went into a part of the woods that not many people go, because I mean, the woods that I do all the time, you know, they're surrounded by neighborhoods, so it's not like you're gonna get lost forever. But a lot of those pieces of the woods, no one ever goes to, because they're not part of the path. And so that's exactly what happened here, which is, it could be anybody's woods.
Just, you know, and they just for landed me, up. For me personally, the movie would work a little better if they had like gotten rid of, let's say, the swimming pool scene, which really didn't add anything for me personally.
Get rid of that.
I'm gonna stop. Get rid of that swimming pool scene and add 3 minutes of him discovering more information. Like, they did have that scene where he looks stuff up on the internet. I found that way too cutty and flashy for my taste. You really had to kind of grasp at the information being flashed in front of you in order to retain any of it. Like, slow that down, draw it out for another 3 minutes, cut the swimming pool out, and I love this movie. So that was just the rule clarification would help a lot. That's all.
Yeah. There's another thing.
I think the swimming pool scene was obviously to what Mike said, which is to try to make us think that these are the villains that get knocked off by the monster.
No, maybe. I can accept that. I'm just stating what would work better for me personally.
Gotcha. Well, I think the swimming pool scene is a matter of twofold. One is, I think it's to add some sympathy to, or empathy for this character. And to give him a narrative arc so that he has a reason to be where he is and doing what he's doing, that is not simply about investigating the monster next door, right? And it's, so it gives him, and it puts him in an competing position in a way. And by the way, you know, this will also come up later, gives him an excuse for like dumping the garbage in the boat the next day and getting in the fight with the kid, and that gets him, you know, increases the tension between him and his father, you know, so that all sort of kind of escalates. And I think in a way it's a way of punishing him for doing something naughty, right? Which is him being a dick to his father and not answering the phone.
Right.
You know, so, you know, if you're someone who wants to see something happen to him, he does get that. He does get kind of his comeuppance, that he's not like a Ferris Bueller who pulls shit and gets away with it. You know, scot free, because except for Ferris Bueller, most of us hate people like that.
Well, I think it was to also just create a chain of events to, and that it puts a ripple of distrust between him and the father, which kind of accumulates when he breaks into the cellar as well. Because it only adds more fuel to the fire, because basically there was something in the Ben's past where he was trying to get drugs from somebody's house and had broken to try to get a hold of them, and there was a whole mess with that. And that's what the father's convinced about later on, when you know he has the cops come over because they think he just broke in because he needed drugs again, because he's not making sense. He's making up his whole story of what's happening, and it's pretty much or add more friction between any sorts of aid that Ben could receive that leaves him more isolated until the climax of the film.
Now, I want to ask about that revelation, because I even asked Pam while we were watching it. I wasn't sure when he told her that story if he was being legit or not.
Yeah, me neither.
Because first of all, at that point, and this is a place where I do think they kind of dropped the ball. We never really get the backstory, which is ironic, because was it last week's movie where they don't tell us the backstory and we kind of piece it as we go along? We don't find out why the breakup occurred. And we don't know, like, is his problems a result of the breakup, or could the breakup be a result of his problems? You know, was there something wrong with the mom? Was there something wrong? What exactly was the story with this? But I had just assumed, because he's been this dorky guy all along, that he just fallen off his bicycle or something and was trying to come up with a cool story so he would
like to sound cool,
his potential romantic lead. And maybe it's the way that he delivered it. Maybe it was the fact that we didn't have Ryan pick up on any, which is the other possibility, foreshadowing to this in terms of what we've seen of that character up to this point, that this was a character who had a history with substance abuse. You know, there wasn't a line drop. There wasn't there wasn't anything that had prepared me for this. And it just seemed so weird to just throw out there. Oh yeah, I was trying to score some Vicodin from my next door neighbors and I fell out the window. Now it is a good setup for what comes later, right? Because, you know, we need to have the thing about him harassing the neighbor and breaking into the house. You know, that, so it does pay off that way. You know, Chekhov's breaking and entering, but yeah. So I was really thrown by that, and it wasn't until like towards that point that payoff at the end of the film, or at the beginning of, I would say probably the final act, that I went, oh, okay, he really had broken his arm trying to steal Vicodin.
Right.
Now,
yeah, and it didn't even occur to me that it was drug issue either. So that's something a stupid kid would do. And then later on, when they're talking about drugs and stuff, it then is like, oh, all right, I guess, yeah. So I get, but you're right. That wasn't explained well enough. So that's a fair point.
Yeah, and I can totally understand how I also feel like it was supposed to be a mislead. One thing in terms of twist and stuff like that and reveals, what was everyone's opinion on the reveal that he forgot his brother?
I thought that was too, pretty cool. So it was pretty solid, yeah. It was like a character that they just kind of written out of the story almost. And I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting, actually. And then suddenly he reappears. It's like, oh, yeah, we forgot about him. Yeah, so I thought that was pretty good. What's your point? Opinion?
Well, I was, you know, because the fact that it was, you know, we didn't get any real scenes between the two characters. Yet, you know, we had the scene between Dylan. I had trouble with the investment in him rescuing his brother because we didn't get any scenes with them.
Right, but the moment.
Well, that's the point, though.
I don't think you need it because he's his brother. It's not like.
Yeah, but it just didn't feel as all that dramatic. I don't know. That's the thing.
I've known him and his brother playing games and stuff earlier in the movie.
No, they didn't. No, it was just the father and him. And that was the part of the.
No, they showed him playing. Oh, no. Are you sure that was the father?
The father and him were sitting there, and
the scenes they showed in the flashbacks when it was revealed that he had forgotten about his brother played differently than they did when we first saw them. When we first saw them,
right.
The little brother was not in the scenes.
That's right. You're right. Yes. Yeah, that's kind of cool though, Abe. Because
it's cool,
that was the point. But let me explain why. Because that's the point, is that you're supposed to forget after the witch kills. That's part of its spell, is that when it kills the child, everybody forgets that the child ever existed.
But he didn't kill. She didn't kill the child.
Well, again, right. Not yet.
Apparently, it's when she takes the child.
Actually, you know what it is? It's when she scratches out, takes a picture, and she scratches out the face. Right? That's when.
Right.
You're right, because it's when he burns all those pictures that everybody remembers.
Yeah, but you know, she only scratches out the father, not the kids.
No, they scratch the kids out too.
No, I literally watched the movie today, and I looked, and she doesn't. She only scratches out the father, not the kids.
I don't know. Either way, we know, based off of what he reads on the internet, that this creature, the dark mother, the wretch, whatever you want to call it, makes you forget your victims, her victims, and it doesn't necessarily mean that those victims are dead. It means that they're kidnapped, or it could have something to do with the pictures too.
But also, that kind of leads to the question: why has she hadn't killed that kid all that time? Or literally, for that matter,
we don't know when she took the kid. Right, because
she was still eating Dylan at that point. But go on, Mike.
Yeah, the entire film to that point is, I would say the entire film is from the point of view of an unreliable narrator. We just never get that hint that it is until when suddenly, you know, it's one of those things where this is a film where I have to go back and rewatch. But like the first time I got a hint but didn't realize it or notice that something was weird was the old woman on the bus, right? Talks about, oh, what a nice little artist you are. And all you see is the, like the one name on the cast, and there's no pictures on the cast, or, you know, I just think that she's talking, and he gives her this weird look, right? Because, and I'm just thinking, here's this old woman who's talking down to clearly a 16 or 17 year old boy, like he's a 4 year old. That's ridiculous. And, you know, I think we all occasionally remember going through that when we were growing up and trying to be an adult, and someone's treating us like we're a child. And that's what I thought was the point of that scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then later on, there was this like weird, and again, I'm like, well, it's a low budget movie. What do you expect? Where Mallory is trying to, well, I'm going to have to find room. She wants, can I sign your cast? I don't know where I'm going to find room. And again, we're seeing this cast where there's almost nothing on it. So I remembered that, and I didn't necessarily pick up on all the other things that were there. I didn't realize that those were clues. And so that is a very, you know, sixth sense sort of reveal where there's something going on that you didn't realize that there was something going on.
Well,
but I will agree with you, Abe, that the fact that we never met the brother before he remembers it, I find it intellectually satisfying. It doesn't have that emotional gut punch that it otherwise might have had, but I don't know how they could have done it, because the whole point is that you have to completely erase his memory of the brother, and in order to do that effectively and still have it be a surprise, they have to erase our memory of it as well, so we never get to see it. So I don't know how they work around.
And if this movie ever comes out with special features like behind the scenes, I'll probably end up purchasing it, because I would be curious to see how the effects were done and all that. And I'd also like to watch it again, because I think if I gave this another watch, I might enjoy it more. Already knowing what happens instead of keeping track of the reveals, I might be able to take it in better on a second watch.
That's true. It might be like, you know, if you watch it again, you might be able to pick up on things with an order as the director had intended. And it might, you know, you might be seeing the breadcrumbs a little more clearly the second time around.
Right. Well, Mike summed it up perfectly. There is a lot of breadcrumbs. It's just that you don't figure it out until after the reveal at the end, because the cast is a perfect example, you know, and that was the big one.
Well, this is a good example of a movie where the word of mouth campaign can kind of spoil the fun, because it's like, you know, the first time you watch an M. Night Shyamalan movie, you might not have been looking for the twist. After Sixth Sense, you cannot watch one of his movies without looking for the twist, and that makes them a little bit easier to spot. If you you're going into this movie looking for a thing, then not only will it distract you from what's actually going on, but it may actually end up spoiling the surprise that comes along. So I think the fact that I went into this, and I think we all went into this, not knowing there was going to be that twist at the end, right? Which I was careful to say that don't let anyone spoil the ending for you. I didn't see the ending was a twist, because there is a, you know, a big kind of other twist at the end, which is that she ends up being, you know, possessing Mal, a couple there. But the real twist in the film is this puzzle of the fact that the brother, that he's a victim too, right? That his brother has been taken and he doesn't remember the brother. And I think that is a neat idea of seeing it from the perspective of one of the victims.
Since we've talked about the other twist, how does everyone feel about that one? Because it kind of leaves me scratching my head as to how the fuck that happened.
Which twist?
Mal's possession.
Oh, Mallory, Mallory turns around and walks back to the tree.
She keeps walking. She kept walking.
She's staring at some the tree. Stops and turns around. Right.
Yeah.
She's stops and turns around. I don't know if we see her walk back to it, but my assumption is that she does. That it calls her back.
Well, that's kind of inconsistent. Because it
depends. If this thing, I mean, and this is again where we wonder if what powers this thing has. Or is this something, like a siren call to resist it?
It didn't need to do that with the other two. Didn't need to do that with Abby.
The
house wasn't sitting down.
Right.
Well, and again, we don't know the limitations of this thing's powers, because like it initially possessed a fucking deer, right?
Yeah,
it came crawling out of that deer. Body.
Yeah.
It feels like they just kind of make it up rules as they go sometimes.
No, I don't know, and I agree with you, Abe, and that was my issue with the movie. But I didn't hate it.
Well, I didn't hate it either. I'm just saying. It's one of those kind of things. It's like, go ahead.
All right. This is what happened. Is that basically, the creature basically grabbed our lead's Ben's leg, and then Molly comes out to pull him out of the tree, and then the father comes and. Driving full force the vehicle, and then Molly and Ben run off to the side, and Mallory and Ben run off to the side, and the truck or vehicle hits the tree, and we assume that which is dead, but then it goes to black, so we don't know what happens. We don't know how Mallory got possessed.
Right. They do say later. I think they were discussing the little brother's therapy, and I guess he said they had to burn the tree.
That's right.
So I guess they ended up setting it on fire at some point.
You mean the little sisters?
Yeah, Lily. Yeah.
Was it the sister? I thought it was Nathan.
Yeah, Mallory.
Oh yeah, right. Yeah. That's it. Yeah, they show the flashback, and she looks back at the tree when the tree burns, and that's when it probably possessed her.
Yeah.
well, that's the thing. It's a supernatural creature, so the question is it a spiritual form as well or not? Because I think we've seen films where they've done this, where one of the heroes at the end of the film, you find out whatever ghost or creature or demon is now in them because they look a weird way or say a weird way. And I'm wishing I could think of those films. But yeah, this one here, it kind of does that. But the thing is like we don't actually ever see how the creature takes over anybody's body. We do know that Abby gets pulled under the crib, but we don't know what happens otherwise. We're assuming it's a physical takeover, but with Sarah and Molly, we have no idea.
Yeah.
Because those happen off screen.
Yeah, sorry, Mike, go ahead.
So I don't know if this is correct or not. This is from the website Cinemaholic. And their argument is that she's actually, they call her the boo hag or bog hag, that there's actually many of them, and that Mallory is just another one. And they mention that there's little things like she mentions that when they this is their take. I'm not saying it's the correct one.
Let me finish. Yeah, this is their take. They point to
a couple of things, saying that she jokes about the dead babies in the basement. That she says during the drinking game because it's a horror movie and people are drinking, so we have to play at Never Have I Ever. But she makes a comment that she never tells her darkest secrets, and that when the tree is burning, that she seems sad. Now, I don't know if that's the case. This is one take of it, because I was just kind of looking for another explanation. And there really aren't that many other attempts to explain the ending. So I guess that is another potential explanation. that I'll try to keep in mind if and when I do rewatch this. Honestly, I think it sounds less plausible than it being the same creature. Personally.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's also on first watch.
Sure.
All right, so if any of us watch it again, keep in the back of your head that there is a small possibility
that Mallory was one Mallory the whole time. Has been
an evil witch for either the whole time, for a good amount of the time. I don't know that I buy it. And I imagine we'd have to pay close attention to that scene of him doing research to see exactly everything that actually does come up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to see if there's any other clues there. Because they mentioned it in there, too, that there's something in that alludes to it.
Well, you know, it seems like in order for it to make people forget, the act, she uses totems.
Yeah.
Because when they burn that house down, everyone starts remembering who they've forgotten.
Right. Yeah, and then when she kidnapped the baby in the crib, she leaves a totem there, a talisman
something. Yeah, a little effigy under the blanket.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the symbol, right? They put the symbol under the mat of Abby's house.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Why?
Yeah, that I kept wondering, because I figured out the totems were to make people forget certain people, but...
Well, it's a rune. It's definitely a rune, right? I mean...
Oh, yeah.
And he finds out on the internet that it's a rune. But yeah, I don't know if they actually explain or they even show his research enough to explain why it puts the rune there, right?
Yeah.
And it marks the tree, right?
Yeah, but they put it on the
door.
There's
one on the tree.
Was
it something where she uses it to mark her lair?
Is it maybe like that? Maybe it's probably like a protective lair thing? Because as it said, on the tree, on the house. But yeah, it doesn't really make it all that clear. But then again, they also leave you question, like, does salt really work at all and stuff like that? Because we don't really see it in action, because the only time he tries it, he throws salt at the Sarah. But it never makes contact, so we don't know if it really works or not.
Right. Yeah, we don't really know. Also, when he's putting salt around his house, Abby comes over with the note anyway, and walks right through the salt, I think. Or he hadn't finished putting it around the whole house yet, or something.
Well, there's a moment, though. However, even if he had been finished later on, she somehow climbs up the house and takes Nathan from there. Because there's a moment where he goes check on Nathan when he suddenly remembers and finds the window smashed. Yeah. So it feels like, you know, I don't know. The ability. It's just because. Also, I don't know. I guess it's just one of those things that you can speculate of here and there. But it's just sometimes it helps the immersion of the storyline when you have a more consistent idea of how things work.
Right. Well, you know what? It's similar to Pie Wacket, where we don't really know much about the creature, right? It's you know, I mean, all you learn is what the main character knows.
Yeah.
You know, and maybe that's a good thing, because then you don't have that exposition dump, you know, and because it's
I
an original
want the
monster.
Exposition dump.
Well, Eric, it's like that, that the Dead Center, too, right? I mean, that one we kind of get an idea, too, right? I mean, that. But we still don't know 100%.
Yeah, that wasn't as complex, though. There's one thing happening there. There's several things happening here, and having rules to clarify would help. That's all.
Yeah, I think the question is, and I can't answer this, so fuck me. the question is, for me, is that did they have the rules and know what the rules were, and follow the rules in the film and just not tell us the rules? Or were they just making shit up as they went along?
Right, and that's right. That's the problem. Like if I can watch this a second time and figure out what the rules are, then I'll be much more forgiving.
Right. And that's why, see, again, that's why I said, like, if there's a if there's a sequel, they really got to lay the rules out. Because the first time through, a mysterious monster, you know, where you can kind of figure out what's going on, but maybe not everything, I think that's fine. But the deeper you go, the more you have to lay out exactly what it is for the audience, mm-hmm. you know, because otherwise it just gives the creators license to do whatever the fuck they feel like. Right.
Well, that's what it comes down to, Mike, is if they had rules in their head and all those rules were followed in the movie, then I'm fine with that if I just wasn't astute enough to pick up on them. But if they're not there, then that's a problem.
Right. Well, another film, what, Blair Witch, right? The Blair Witch Project, right? I mean, do we know the full rules on that creature, too? We don't think we did, right?
Nope.
Except so I'm pretty sure they made that shit up as they went along.
Right. Well, yeah, because it was unscripted.
Right. And, well, I mean, they had certain events scripted, you know, but...
Yeah, right, but, right.
And the background of the witch itself was all that... I mean, obviously, they made the fake documentary to go with it, but... I mean, the lead character's perspective of what was going on was our perspective, too, right? I mean, that's it.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's the best comparison.
Yeah.
I would also, you know,
I'm not saying you shouldn't enjoy this movie, Phil.
No.
If you love it, that's fantastic. Yeah. Buy yourself a copy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just saying these are issues I noticed on my first watch.
Yeah, and they're kind of fair. They're kind of fair. I mean, I think the big one was, why was Abby all screwed up while Sarah wasn't as bad, and then Mallory wasn't bad
now,
at all.
Now,
I mean, I could explain that as maybe, but you know, like I said earlier, which is as it jumped to body to body to body, it learned how to do it better. But again, creatures are supposed to be 1,000 years old, right?
Yeah, but that could have worked. If maybe they hadn't showed that 35-year pass opening scene.
That's what I'm saying, yeah. But again,
anyway, I'm done with my nitpicking. We can move on.
Right. Yeah, well, you know what's funny though is that, like, for example, the little kid, obviously Dylan, he knew something was up. But the husband, Ty, he didn't know any difference with his wife, and it wasn't because he was clueless. It was because when she was around him, she acted normal. It was only around Dylan that she was all fucked up. And then when she eventually went over to get Dylan from Ben figured it out too, because she obviously came right out and threatened him. But she was always normal around.
Well, also Ty was kind of, you know, he wasn't sharp until in the shed. So, but right. there was also the thing. Another thing about the creatures that we see with also possessed Sarah is that they both try to bewitch them through, like, almost like a succubus, because there's later on when Ben gets arrested, Sarah tries to seduce the father as well.
Right. Yeah. So, oh, yeah. That's true. Yeah. He have the father not go bail out his son from the police, she was using her sexuality to try to keep him at home. Yeah, that's a good point.
And I think maybe that's part of the brainwashing process in which they almost, I guess, a bewitching thing.
Yeah, right.
I just got a mental image of her twitching her nose.
Well, you know, the witches all want to steal your semen. That's the whole problem.
What?
Well, that is something in folklore, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, Mike's not. He may be obviously trying to get a shock out of Eric, but he's actually somewhat worried.
No, I just watched something. We just watched something. Oh, that's what it was. Right. Okay. Yes. Thanks. That's gonna drive me crazy.
Oh, we do in the shadows.
It was. Yeah, they make a joke about that. The vamp. Be careful. The witches.
Yeah, the witches are always trying to steal your semen.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
There you go. Yeah. Let's see what else. I was shocked that the cop blew his own brains out.
That was kind of cool. It was because he felt bad about shooting the dog.
Yeah, and he knew that he was being controlled rather than, you know, making his own decisions.
Well, and he also knew that he was going to go to hell because he killed the dog.
Well, he did kill the dog.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't.
Well,
know
he thought he did. Thought he did. He didn't know that.
But it also kind of makes you question how is it dependent on the person that can actually free himself temporarily against the spell?
Right. Or the spell wear off or something like that, or how far away you are from the wretch. Ty, he's literally right there continually in the house with the wretch. Maybe it's the spell's more powerful there. I mean, yeah, that's a good question there.
Because, you know, Ty follows every bit of orders. He acts like a drone to do the lawn, anything that makes him appear quote-unquote normal. And even commits suicide after the wretch leaves Abby's body to take over Sarah.
All right. Yeah, so basically when the scene that Mike mentioned, when the wretch was trying to, you know, pulled out the tooth and was rubbing her skin to try to get rid of the
tooth. The tooth got me, by the way. The tooth fucking got me. I was just
right after that happened, that's when Abby leaves the house in the fancy red dress, I think. I don't know. That's when she decides that she's going to take over another body because the Abby body is done. Yeah.
It's all fucked up.
Yeah, which is terrible because Abby was a good mother and all that other stuff. And she was hot, too.
I forced you to fucking finish with that.
Ah, no, she deserved to die. She ate her baby.
She didn't eat her baby. The thing ate her baby.
Yeah, the thing ate her baby.
No. She ate her baby. That was punishment. That was all.
Smoke baby back then.
No, she was a good mother too. She got up to check the baby every time it made noise, you know, cried and all that. Yeah, she was good. She was a good mother to Dylan too. She was a good mother to both her kids. She was a really good mother, and she had tattoos. Which
there was another kid.
Yeah, it was the baby.
Remember. I don't remember another kid.
Baby.
Okay.
Gotcha.
What do you guys think of the things in the attic, in the basement, and stuff? It was kind of like Hereditary, kind of sort of.
Yeah, it's your typical spooky house with creepy stuff in it.
I like the touch that when the dad found that thing with all the pictures and set it on fire, that everybody remembered the kids that they forgot. I really liked that touch.
Yeah, the spell was broken and all that. That was really cool. Go ahead.
I loved how the father didn't believe the son that check the basement. And then eventually he does go and check the basement. It's not there.
Like, what the fuck? Thinks,
yeah.
No. There was nothing there. And then he suddenly thinks, oh, you know what? Maybe I should check the attic. because the witch did was use this basement for Abby's house. And then since Ben knew about that, when she took over Sarah's body, rather than use the basement, she went and decided to use the attic instead. And I thought that was pretty cool.
I also like how the father suddenly comes at the end of the truck. I honestly wasn't expecting that. I thought they were going to take care of the witch some other way.
I thought it was kind of lame myself, but
I was honestly didn't expect him to suddenly pull some flying right in.
Didn't he have a spinal injury?
I don't think.
No, he gets stabbed.
Yeah, didn't he get stabbed in the spine?
No, more like to the side.
Stabbed in the back. Yeah, I think it was more like the kidney area.
Hmm. All right.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I mean, and at least he was incapacitated, right? It wasn't like he was running around after being stabbed, like we've seen in a lot of other films. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking exactly. That's and some of the slasher shit from the 80s, but yeah, Prometheus was the most egregious.
But I always still laugh when they're trying to outrun that rolling spaceship in a straight line instead of going to the fucking left or right.
Yeah, well, anyway, we're now talking about
another. Oh, that's a good
point. Are we done with this one?
Yeah. Why did Charisse Theron not run to the right or left? Yeah, that's a good point.
Wasn't in her contract.
The same reason that Rickon did.
Rickon.
Game of Thrones.
I've heard that. Oh, you're right.
Well, Rickon had the advantage of being a stupid little child.
I don't know if I call that an advantage.
Well, it is to justify why you were stupid.
Rickon at that point was basically not a child anymore. Anyway, for this film here, when Lily got taken, I kind of knew Ben wasn't going to be able to pull her out, because if he had, and we still had like 30 minutes into the film left, then you know he saves a kid from a monster. And how is that going to be explained? So I knew she wasn't going to make it, at least then. I mean, she makes it at the end. But so I thought that was good. And I thought how they worked it in where he falls as he's pulling her and he bangs his head and he gets a concussion. And then he wakes up at nighttime. And as we know, that tree is like in an extra dimension. So it's not always there. So when he wakes up, it's gone. Similar to when we saw it earlier when Abby and Dylan were in the woods. And I thought that was kind of cool. And that's when he came home and he was reported for breaking into the other people's house.
Oh, you know,
and
what?
That's what that.
Listening to you talk about that makes me really want to watch this a second time. Because I just realized that Ben, for whatever reason, remembered Lily, even though her sister didn't. So. But it's got to be. There's got to be a connection to what she does with the pictures somehow. But yeah. I don't know exactly what it is. I got to watch it again and pay closer attention.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. That's an interesting point. And actually, right after that whole incident when Lily gets taken, and he goes home, and the cops are there what's her name? Sarah's there. And she's already possessed at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was kind of cool. Anything else anybody want to bring up? Is there any other scenes that we missed that we wanted to bring up? I guess that's it. All right, so before we get into our final thoughts and all that, news and what we've been watching or anything like that that anybody wanted to bring up?
Yeah, I got something. Right before I hopped on here, I was Hulu has become my favorite streaming thing recently, and I've been watching What We Do in the Shadows that Mike and I were just referencing. But right before I hopped on here, I was watching a show called Prodigal Son. I think it's something that listeners of this podcast might get into. It's basically about a serial killer who's married to a very wealthy woman. Eventually he's a surgeon, and therefore his nickname is very originally The Surgeon. But eventually he gets caught and
could
put
be
in prison.
Doc.
And his son ends up becoming a profiler and working on homicide cases. So it's a pretty good show. I was pleasantly surprised when I was watching an episode right before we started recording tonight. And a friend of the podcast, Jeremy Holm, popped up as the bad guy in an episode. I was like, hey, I know him. Cool. So everybody watch Prodigal Son on Hulu and keep an eye out for The Ranger.
Yeah, there you go. I was going to say you have to use his real name.
So Prodigal Son.
Phil can't remember his real name, so we'll refer to him as the Ranger.
Yeah, so basically, what you're saying is the show is
was like, who the hell is Jeremy Holm? But then we put the Ranger. I was like, oh yeah.
So I will I will never forget having breakfast with him, and the whole time, Phil just keeps on calling him the Ranger. Hey, the Ranger. Let me ask you something.
Yeah, the Ranger. It has both words together. Hey, the Ranger.
So what you're saying, though, Eric, is basically the show is Silence of the Lambs with a father and son?
Kind of. There's a little bit of a humorous element to it, and there's other family members involved. And also, Lou Diamond Phillips is in the show kind of as the cop mentor to this guy. So I've been enjoying the show.
Speaking of Prodigal Son,
but
what we've been doing.
Well, wait a minute, hold on. Two things. Are there any dead children?
No, not yet. Right, at least
pick one. Any William Shatner?
No William Shatner.
Right two. All right, that's not sounding good so far. All right.
Speaking of Proglan and What We Do in the Shadows, both are Fox productions, and Hulu and Fox are both owned by Disney. So that's part of the reason why they're getting those shows, because they're not originals, I don't think.
I also watched the Apple TV Plus show Defending Jacob.
Yeah, me too.
It's good, but kind of a bummer.
The ending, they destroyed it because the book, they changed the complete
ending. Oh, is it based on
a
book? I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah, the last...
Well, you don't like any adaptation of a book, so...
No, dude. It's completely different. What happens is they make the woman...
Spoiler alert for Defending Jacob.
No, this isn't really a spoiler alert, but they make the woman look like she's a really bad person when in the book...
The mother?
She's not a bad person because of what happens. Yeah, the mother.
Okay.
The mother, they make, gets a bad rap and a completely different ending when in the book, let's just say she's right.
Oh, I was assuming she was right.
Yeah, so it was very unfortunate. I was good to it until the last episode, and then when but I was like, what the fuck? This changes everything. Yeah, so anyway, I got to say though, it was a well made production though. Whether the ending is a misstep or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What else, Erica? Have you seen anything else recently?
Let's see. I finally caught up with. I've been meaning to watch this movie for a long time. It was a 2006 movie called Carla. Stars Laura Prepon as shit. Now I'm totally forgetting the real person's name.
Carla.
I'm forgetting her last name. Homolka. Carla Homolka, and Paul Bernardo, a married couple of murderers in Canada. It's about her. So it's a fictionalized version of that couple. And oddly enough, Paul, her husband, is played by Misha Collins, who's gone on to be quite well known as Gabriel on or not Gabriel, Castiel on Supernatural. So if you ever want to see Castiel play a serial killer, check out Carla,
a real serial killer too, yeah.
Yeah.
Speaking of Defending Jacob, last Friday when I watched the last episode,
I immediately posted on Facebook after writing it, and you must have missed it, Eric. I don't really complete Facebook anymore. Yeah, I don't blame you. I wrote, they completely changed the ending in defending Jacob. I call bullshit. And that's what I posted. And not one person responded, so I don't think anybody's seen the show.
Or maybe nobody's read the book.
Yeah, or that too. Yeah, yeah. But I thought,
cares?
Yeah, that could be true too. But I thought the show was pretty popular. That I would have.
I think the show has had Apple putting money into marketing it, and I think there's a difference between those two things.
Yeah, yeah. Fair enough. And it stars, you know, some big actors because
Chris Evans is one of the leads. Yeah,
right. And the mother is the lead from Downtown Abbey. She's the lead from Downtown Abbey.
What's her name? I want to find out because she was actually, I thought, better than
by far.
Chris Evans. Yeah.
Doubt about it.
Michelle Dockery.
Yeah, yeah. And so she's huge. That's the thing. Chris Evans and Michelle Dockery are like huge actors and actresses. But if you've never seen anything that they're in, you wouldn't even know who they are. Like my wife didn't know who Chris Evans was, but she knew who Michelle Dockery was because she watches Downtown Abbey, but she doesn't watch.
And I immediately recognized Cherry Jones, but couldn't place her from anything. So I looked her up and she's been in like everything. Same with Betty Gabriel. I was like, who's that? I know who that is. Where do I know her from? And she was in both Get Out and Upgrade.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yeah. I knew her. But who was the first person? Cherry, whatever.
Cherry Jones.
Yeah.
She was the lawyer.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. She was in Signs. She played the cop in Signs.
Yeah, and I figured out that's where I initially know her from. But I've also seen several other things she's been in.
Yeah, I think she was in Minority Report too. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And The Handmaid's Tale, and then she's one of those faces that's just been in a lot of things.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. What about you, Abe? Have you seen anything, watched anything, or anything like that?
Nothing really new on my end. I've just been working a lot.
All right. Well, what about you, Mike? Anything you got?
I'm trying to think. I not much genre related. I did watch Devs.
That's interesting.
Which is also on Hulu.
You want to do a special episode on that, Eric and Mike?
Yeah.
Honestly, after we just did Westworld.
Yeah,
and it hits a lot of the same stuff.
So,
okay.
Yeah, I mean it's a different presentation of it, but it's all the whole determinism thing all over. So, maybe not now. If a couple years, maybe.
Yeah, it's by the same guy who did Ex Machina. It is more cerebral science fiction.
Beautiful.
It is beautifully shot.
Annihilation.
Right. I would certainly recommend, if you're someone who liked those films, I might recommend it. I didn't like it as much as those two films, but I also did devour it in probably 2 days.
Oh, 28 days late? Yeah.
I would recommend it giving a shot if you like those. I just didn't like them as much. I watched the Pixar movie Onward, which is completely unrelated, but I had fun with it. I'm in the middle of, I think we talked about it last time, I'm in the middle of watching the second season of Castle Rock, and I'm enjoying it a lot more than the first. So I would kind of give that a recommendation. And that's been about it that I can think of. I'd started to watch Captive State, but I wasn't able to finish it. So maybe I'll be able to say something about that next week. I know, Eric, you liked it.
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't. I wanted it to be better.
What's it called again?
Captive State.
It's a
alien movie with John Goodman's in it, isn't he?
Oh, it's a movie and it's aliens. Is it new?
No, we talked about it.
Not those aliens.
It was last year.
Oh, yeah, that's the one that you said was just okay, Eric. Yeah, I remember you saying that.
But it also got really badly banned. And most of the reviews I've heard from, like, word of mouth since then were, I don't know why this movie did badly. It's not a bad movie.
It's so. Not a bad movie. It's not a great movie either, but it's certainly not awful.
Right. Interesting. Anything else, Mike?
Nothing I can think of. I basically
did you
finished
like that
up
alien?
School in the last week. So.
Did you like that Alien book? I mean, Alien movie?
As I just said, I didn't get a chance to finish watching it.
Gotcha.
So
well,
I'll have to let you know.
Oh, that's why you said you'll let us know next week after you've seen the whole thing. Gotcha. I didn't understand.
Yeah.
Well, Mike is... Well, no, actually, it's not Mike. I'm sorry, Mike. It's Eric is the one that always picks on me when I watch a film halfway through and then pick it up later. He goes, how can you do that? That's ridiculous.
I do pick on you. I don't understand doing that at all.
Are you going to pick on Mike for doing the same thing?
You didn't give me a chance. I was going to, but not now.
Yeah, for me, I saw The Assistant starring one of Eric and my favorite actresses from Ozark. Jennifer Garner stars in it. Julia Garner. I'm sorry.
Okay, that makes more sense. All right.
Yeah. She plays, what's the character's name in Ozark that she plays? Not Helen.
Is it Ruth?
Yeah, I think it's Ruth, yeah. Yeah, I think that's it. But either way, she plays a office assistant just out of college at a casting movie production company, A Day in the Life, and it's a New York-based company, and it is very much what do we call it, a character study and also a commentary on the casting couch. Certain things are alluded to, and it plays into that a lot. It's got really good reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. Me and my wife watched it, and my wife thought the movie was terrible because it was kind of art housey. Even though she usually likes art housey films, but this one, it's an interesting film because it's an hour and 30 minutes or so, and like 40 minutes of it are just mundane things like her pouring coffee or her doing copies at the Xerox machine or her, you know, things like that. So it's like, why are they wasting 30 minutes, 40 minutes of the film doing that? But again, it's a day in the life. And the real thing is the things that happen around or she figures out that happen up with the casting couch and these various women. And so it's a really good film, I felt.
I haven't seen it, but I would imagine that the reason they did it that way is to point out that, yeah, these things were going on, but it wasn't going on every minute of every day. It's not like there was an orgy going on 24/7. Exactly. There were also these mundane things happening around everything else.
Right. And it's a strong commentary because all the characters in the film that are peripheral, even including Julia Garner's character, are indirectly complicit. That's the word I'm looking for, not guilty. Thank you. So even though they try to do things or they poo-poo what's going on or they go to HR or whatever, even after they do all these things, and they prefer to keep their job and turn a blind eye. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So it's a kind of interesting film on that on the casting couch. And then I've also seen 6 Scooby Doo movies. So I saw the new.
Oh, good Lord!
Yeah. Well, my kids are now into Scooby. So we bought.
Whoa, whoa.
I know that's what we do now.
Nice,
we do
the.
We do that. fist pump, because he doesn't have a hand. He has to fist pump. And so we watched Scoob, the brand new one that's making a fortune on VOD. And it's a really fun movie. There's a lot of Easter eggs for those who are original with the original TV series, which was called Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? So that's cool. And then there's also...
Sorry, yeah. I was just going to say, I will never forget the moment I learned that Casey Kasem did the voice of Shaggy. on the original Scooby-Doo, because I also listened to American Top 40, which he was the host of on the radio back when we used to do that. So after I learned that he did the voice of Shaggy, whenever I listened to the American Top 40, that's all I could fucking hear was Shaggy on the radio about the Top 40. I was like, oh no, it's all been ruined.
That's too funny. And then they wanted more Scooby-Doo, so we got Scooby-Doo the movie and Scooby-Doo 2 Monsters Unleashed, and they liked those as well. Actually, Scoob actually has an origin story, which is kind of cool. And then we got Daphne and Velma, the film that came out like a year and a half ago, and they liked that one a lot too. And then we got the two TV movies, I think, that were on the Sci-Fi Network, Scooby-Doo, Curse of the Lake Monster, and Scooby-Doo, The Mystery Begins. And so they've been really into the Scooby-Doos. And if you like Scooby-Doo, they're all fun. And then the new one, though, is the big one right now, and everybody's talking about it.
Have you watched Scooby Natural yet?
No, what's that one? I'm not familiar with this one.
It's an episode of Supernatural in season
13. Oh, yeah. You told me about that.
Episode 6, I think. Yeah, probably best not to watch that one with the kids, but you should watch it.
Yeah. You definitely should watch it. A little bit more adult.
Right. Gotcha.
There are certainly jokes about, you know, the girls.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Yeah.
Trivia is that
that's probably on Amazon, right? Or I mean Netflix or something.
That's how I watched it.
I think it's season 13. Of the series, I think has Scooby Natural.
Yeah, I think it's 15 now. 6.
Gotcha. I'll have to check it out then. All right.
But it is titled Scooby Natural, so it's easy to find.
Gotcha. All right, sounds good. So, 13-6. I'll check that out on Netflix.
I don't know if you know, Phil, and completely random Scooby-Doo trivia is that Frank Welker, who's a classic voice actor, originally played Fred, but he's also now playing plays Scooby. He's playing both Fred and Scooby in the
animated one. So they brought him back.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he's never, I mean, apparently there was a little brief period where he wasn't Fred, but apparently he's like always been Fred. Frank Welker did like Megatron in the old Transformers cartoon, and I think Soundwave, he played, if you remember Raiders of the Lost Ark, the little Nazi monkey? He did the voice for the little Nazi monkey. It's something like he's apparently very talented at, is doing animal noises for movies and TV shows.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, Fred Welker's doing it. Yeah, you're right. How about that? Oh yeah, I know this guy, actor. I've seen him before and stuff. Yeah, he's done other stuff besides voice.
I'm completely wrong about the episode number 2. It is season 13, but it's like it's way higher than 6. It's like 17 or something.
17. Okay, gotcha. All right, fair enough. That's right. They have 24 episodes in that show. That's pretty much all I got. All right. I guess we can get into our final thoughts. But before we do that, Eric, you actually do another podcast with your buddy Dan?
I do. It's a general interest podcast called the Askancity Podcast. That's spelled Askancity. You can find it wherever you got this one.
Excellent. And Mike, me, you, and Eric are doing a new podcast again?
Oh, yeah, we are. We're doing Cinema a la Carte, and we'll be recording that in just a couple of days, and we'll be reviewing a science fiction classic, Forbidden Planet.
Excellent. And Abe, me, you, Kevin Letts, and Barrett did a book episode recently?
Yes, we did. We've been, for the past couple of months, we've been covering different stories, a couple by Stephen King, and now we're in a Lovecraft binge. We just did Whisperer in the Dark, and we have another one episode coming down the road, coming in just, I would say, by the end of this month we should have it out, or at least we do the
at least record it.
But yeah. I'm not going to spoil what it is, until afterwards because we were making sure to hope, you know, we were kind of a little cursed for a while to try and record the last one. But look forward to it when it finally gets released.
Yep, very good. And such. So, all right, so let's get our final thoughts on this film here, The Wretched. So let's start with you, Eric.
I thought this movie was okay. I thought it looked good. I thought the acting was good. But I had some issues with the rules. I might give it another watch, see if it can make a little more sense to me. But I wouldn't warn people away from it. This one just didn't hit on the first try for me personally. I think it's a pretty good movie.
All right, very good. Yeah, for me, I love this film. I thought it was a really good scary horror film. I also liked the coming of age film, and the kid with the multiple girls and all that. I also loved the family that became the victim, and everything about it was just solid for me. So I give it a high thumbs up, and we'll probably have it easily on my top 10 and maybe even my top 5 at the end of the year. Abe?
I did enjoy this film. I had some problems with some of the lore rules and a couple of the some storytelling issues, but I still had a lot of fun with it. I always liked these kind of these stories. I did enjoy the cast. I thought the creature was really, really cool, and there was some really nice eerie and unsettling moments of body horror. It is a fun watch, and I do recommend you checking it out. What you join is going to be up to you. But, it's out right now on video demand. And if you're feeling up to it, if you're looking for a kind of different sort of BC in terms of the monster genre, give it a shot.
All right, very good. And Mike?
I liked it a lot. I had a lot of fun with it. So I really like the film. I think it's a lot of fun. It's not perfect by any means, but as we mentioned many times already in this podcast, I think a second viewing may or may not shed some light on things that there were questions about, or you know, maybe that we didn't think were set up, but actually perhaps were, if we know to go back and look for it. And you know, a movie that kind of begs for rewatching that you won't dread rewatching can't be all that bad. But yeah, I did enjoy, and again, the special effects, if that's the thing you're into, I thought the practical effects were really, really good in this. And not that anything else was necessarily overly bad, but that really just was a solid, solid entry here. So.
Right, yeah. And the monster was pretty cool, too. Okay, so once again, this is called The Wretched, directed by Brett Pierce and Drew T. Pierce, starring John Paul, Howard, Zara, Mahler, Piper Curter, among others. It is actually at theaters, specifically drive-ins, and that's why it has that record that Eric brought up earlier. But it is a pretty good film, even if it was a technically truly a more likely a VOD release, because IFC usually just does VODs, but because of what the issues are now and drive-ins are becoming more popular again, it was a perfect film for a drive-in for sure. So check it out if you want. If you're lucky enough, you can see it on the drive-in, but if not, it's available everywhere where VOD is found, and it's rental only at the moment. So I guess with all that stated, Eric, why don't you lead us out?
All right. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk about The Wretched. Come back next week. We'll have another topic.